Hello, everybody. Sorry about the delay in our second sessions, but here we are. And I am joined by Helen Milner, who's the group CEO of the Good Things Foundation, and she will delve into how to build a digital nation. So without further ado, a very warm welcome to you, Helen.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for introducing me. And sorry, everybody, that I was proving my tech inability. So I had joined the conference as a participant, and then I had to unjoin and rejoin as a speaker. So I was quite enjoying the idea of doing my speech as a chat panel. But lovely to be with you all. I caught most of Lisa's presentation earlier, which was fantastic and gave you so much rich information about digital inclusion. So I'm hoping that we still will have lots of time for questions. So I'm going to run through my slides. So building a digital nation. As hopefully those of you who are interested in digital inclusion know, that each year we publish what we call a digital nation infographic. And this is the one for 2024. On one side, we have the digital excluded world, we have the bridges that enable people to be connected, and then on the other side, we have that connected world. We have the numbers, who's offline, the demographics of who's offline, what people think, and then obviously some of those benefits as well. So diving into this a bit more, just to say that this is available obviously on the Good Things Foundation website, and also there's a really helpful sources document as well that will go through where all of these numbers come from, so you can find that out too. So how big is the digital divide in the UK? So 8.5 million people lack basic digital skills. So that's based on the Lloyds Digital, the Lloyds Consumer Digital Index. That we have 2.4 million households who can't afford their mobile phone contract. And unfortunately, that the numbers of people who, from affordability points of view, who can't afford either a device or connection has actually gone up because of the cost of living crisis. We have 3.7 million families are below the minimum digital living standard. So this is some work that we've done at Good Things with the University of Liverpool and the University of Loughborough and Nuffield Foundation. This is where families have co-designed and co-created what they see as being that minimum digital living standard. And shockingly, when we put that against the number of families in the country, 3.7 million are below that level. So that's absolutely shocking. So who is it? Basically, it's people who are who have low incomes. So 37% of those over 65, but they are usually people who are older and poorer, people without any formal qualifications. Again, they're people who have often have low-skilled jobs or in and out of work. Or are not working. 24% of people who are not working, and 25% of those people with a disability or health condition. So, who are we? Who's Good Things Foundation? Hopefully, you all are a bit aware of us. We're the UK's leading digital inclusion charity, and we're working to help people to have the internet access they need, to have somewhere local to go to help to use the internet, and so that they feel able and safe in the online world so that they can be happier, healthier, and better off. And we do this through three main things. So, the National Digital Inclusion Network, if we're talking about how to build a digital nation, it's about that collective collaboration and bringing together all of those local organizations, all of those charities working at that local level, reaching and supporting people every day. And as Lisa said in the previous presentation, that's not about high street computer centers. This is about charities working with migrants and asylum seekers. It's about charities working with people with disabilities, about charities working with older people, as well as those community anchor organizations. So the National Digital Inclusion Network, over 5,000 local places now across the whole of the UK. We also have a network in Australia, which is interesting but not relevant today. And those networks, community centres, small local charities, libraries, We have food banks, we have the local branches of Citizens Advice or Age UK. Salvation Army do a lot of work in this area as well. But then we also have some private sector people coming on board as well. So the Virgin Media branches, all Virgin Media stores, as they call them, banks, as I would call them, sorry, Virgin Money banks are all in the network. And all O2 owned O2 local mobile phone stores, all in that network. So it's a real mix of public, private, councils, housing associations, job centres. I call it a big club with a shared vision. So anyone who is supporting people, or if you need support to help people who are digitally excluded, be part of that network and then you can be part of that movement for digital inclusion. And then we support that network through capability building with Learn My Way, that's a free online learning platform, but also with these two services to help people with access. So the National Data Bank, where we have 500,000 SIMs free to give to people who can't afford the internet through the National Data Bank, and more than 100,000 people have already been supported through that National Data Bank. It has free and mobile connectivity from O2, from Vodafone, and from Three. And then the National Device Bank, where we take devices donated by businesses, so businesses like Deloitte, but also from public sector. So 25% of London councils are donating to the Device Bank. Liverpool City Region is donating to the Device Bank. We have some NHS trusts as well donating to that Device Bank. So we get those in, we work with a professional partner to refurbish them, and then we get them out to digitally excluded people across the UK. So people like Minaj, who was struggling with mental health, she barely left the house, but she worked with her local community partner within the National Digital Inclusion Network to get those digital skills that we need, so that she could get the support that she needed for her mental health. And she got to that class, that session, because there was a poster in the doctor's surgery. She said, "I knew how to use a computer, but not very well." So she used Learn My Way with the help of that local charity, and they helped her to sort out her medication, to order her prescriptions online, to use the NHS app. And then she became such an evangelist that she developed her skills so much that she then became a mentor at the local hub, and then she got a job to work there more herself. She then got a job, which was fantastic. And then we have Julie. So Julie, a little bit older, Julie felt intimidated by the internet. She couldn't send any emails, and she got help from a local partner, Learn for Life, that's in Sheffield. She got a laptop, free mobile data. We always give the devices with a way in which you can use that mobile data, SIM-enabled often. And then also the skills to use it. And Julie says, without the data, devices and skill support, I would have been letting the world go by. It has really given me a new lease of life and a sense of freedom. Now I'm living life on my own terms, which is fantastic. And I don't know if any of you saw, but in March we had almost 200 billboards across the country. It was all developed for free, pro bono, by JC Dechow, who gave us those billboards for free, which was fantastic, being able to promote the cause of digital exclusion. So back to the digital nation. So what are the benefits? So once you've crossed over those bridges, you perhaps got support from a network or from Learn My Way, devices, data, then, as I said before, we're looking to help people to get to be digitally able, equal, and safe, so that they're happier, healthier, and better off. So happier, 76% say the internet helps them connect with family and friends. Healthier, 68% of people say they can use online tools to help them manage their health. Better off, people with high digital engagement save £900 a year or more. And also, from an employment point of view, 68% saw work or skills related benefits. So that's fantastic. Those benefits that people are getting from being digitally included. So I'm going to say a little bit about the election and about what we're looking from a new government in the future. But actually, what do the public think? So we've done some public polling to help us to talk to politicians. So 64% of people believe there's not enough support for people who can't get online. So that's a very big number. So this is an online poll of a representative a number of people across the country. And sorry, it isn't online. These are from online polls. So this is about asking people who are online. 92% think that essential services require internet access. 21% of people, so these are people who are already online, but 21% of them feel left behind by technology. So as that digitization accelerates, that pace of change accelerates, then they feel left behind by technology. And 76%, so three quarters of the population, want government to invest in digital skills training. So what about the future? We're in a general election period, as you all will know. And so just this morning, we've had a launch event for our manifesto. So as lots of organisations have, we're laid out five asks from the future government for them to show sustained joined up leadership, to prioritise digital inclusion and to commit to publishing a clear plan of action. Hopefully, lots of you have also been aware of the House of Lords, the Communications and Digital Committee last year published a great report on digital exclusion that had lots of evidence and lots of ideas for how to fix the digital divide, how to create this digital nation that we're looking for. So we have five asks. The first one is we want government to show that leadership, but also to collaborate with businesses, to civil society and the public sector to fix the digital divide. I talked about individuals will benefit financially by being online, but actually we also know that if we do fix that digital divide, which is possible, then the nation would get £13.7 billion of benefit back. So this is not just an equality issue, a social justice issue. This is also about an economic issue. And for every £1 invested in digital inclusion, then there's almost £10 back to the economy. So absolutely, there's a business case as well as a kind of moral case for fixing that digital divide. So we want government to show that leadership, but to bring in a collaboration. And we also want businesses to step forward even more so. They have absolutely stepped up since the beginning of the pandemic, but to co-invest with government, or government to co-invest with business, if you like, to fix that digital divide and create that digital nation. So looking at those three main barriers to digital inclusion, we want to make sure that we want the next government to ensure that all adults can get vital help with digital skills, confidence, and safety in an age of AI. At Good Things Foundation, we believe that AI literacy is now fundamental to digital literacy. And so it's really important that as technology changes, that we make sure that everybody in our society can have that basic skill so they can function, but also understand the digital world that is around them and that hopefully that they're part of. We think that a new government should review the learning frameworks and the public funding that is spent on essential digital skills. We know that less than 18,000 people are getting support through that formal funding, through that formal route from further education and from adult and community learning, which is a terribly small number. Just to put that in perspective, we had a pilot just in three regions around essential digital skills, community pathways, and we helped over 5,500 people just through those three small pilots. So 7 to 18,000, so it's 17,400 is a terribly small number. So we absolutely need to make sure that the money that DfE is investing in those basic digital skills gets to the people who need it, and probably in an informal and community-based environment is much better. We want the next government to lead by example and to put their tech into the National Device Bank, or to make sure that it's being reused for digital inclusion. The UK is the second worst emitter of e-waste per capita in the world. So I think that's partly to do with the fact that we are early adopters in technology, so those of us who are online. But so much of our tech goes into e-waste, which is absolutely shocking. So the good news is that last week, Peter Kyle, the Shadow Secretary of State for the Department for science, innovation, technology, for the Labour Party. So if the Labour Party do win the next election, Peter Kyle has committed that a new Labour government would look at making sure that all appropriate government technology was reused for digital inclusions. That's absolutely fantastic. So that's great to get that support from the Labour Party. We know that a number of civil servants are looking at this as well, which is absolutely fantastic. But we also want the government to lead by example and to keep up that pressure. So for them to donate their tech, they can then get businesses and public sector to, like councils, 25% of councils in London are reusing their tech. So let's make sure that they're using their leadership to get others across public and private sector to donate as well. We know that affordability of the internet, of broadband, of mobile connectivity is beyond people. I've met a woman who cried when she got her free mobile connectivity from the National Data Bank. So that's for 6 or 12 months. She cried with joy because she could now contact her mother who lived in Ireland, and she had two small children and she really needed that support. We do have like one of the most competitive markets in the world for broadband and mobile connectivity, but actually that doesn't mean that people can't afford it. So we still have real poverty in the UK, and affordability is absolutely important. We have at Good Things Foundation, we work in partnership with a number of partners, including Nominet, on a data poverty lab. So trying to look at innovation. Obviously, we have the National Data Bank, but we definitely think more can be done. And obviously, social tariffs need to be part of that innovation as well. And then our last one, very pragmatic, is we want government and the NHS frontline services to signpost people to that local support in the National Digital Inclusion Network. So the network is there. I know that many local organisations, community organisations, are finding it tough, but they absolutely want to help the people in need. So if people ring government helplines, if people go to job centres, if people are telling their GP that they can't afford the internet or they don't know how to use the internet, then if we can just have some simple signposting, this requires leadership, it requires prioritisation, it requires hard work, but it doesn't require money at the signposting end. We definitely would want money, and we want that co-investment to support those community organisations who are doing that hard work on the ground. So there are five asks from government, and the good news is that, as I said, Peter Kyle gave that speech at London Tech Week last week, and he also visited a digital inclusion hub that's part of the National Digital Inclusion Network in Croydon last week. And so, of course, we're working with all political parties to talk to them about our manifesto for change. But we're very, very hopeful that we may have, if the polls are right, we might have a government who is going to support digital inclusion, which would be absolutely fantastic. So the other thing I wanted to say about the future is about generative AI and emerging technologies. So that we can't stand still, can we, when we're talking about digital inclusion? So we need to make sure that we're looking at the technology. And we've been lucky enough to work with some AI experts at Accenture. We are able to do that as they're one of our strategic partners alongside Virgin Media O2, Vodafone, and Nominet. But we have developed this taster, this video taster, Introduction to Artificial Intelligence, because we saw that there was a real gap where people were coming to the National Digital Inclusion Network partners in those local, hyperlocal, in communities and asking, what is AI? Do I need to be scared of it? What are the risks? Will I be scammed? How can I use it? And so we've developed this content. But it's so important that we understand that AI and Gen AI is going to change our society. So we really want to make sure that we're keeping pace and that we're talking to decision makers so they don't just see this as being kind of shiny new sexy thing, that we're actually using it. And there may well be some charities online today who are also using AI to help you to drive your businesses and to make your services to better more efficient, more effective, so that you can focus on that support side of what you're doing. So AI is here to stay. It's going to shift society, and we absolutely need to be on top of it. As that digital divide narrows, it also deepens. So it's so important that those people who are still at that deep side depth of that crevasse, that we make sure that we're helping them, not just with those sending an email, but also understanding the society as technology emerges. So I'm going to finish shortly, so we have some time for some questions or some comments. So how can you help to fix the digital divide and create that digital nation? So join the Digital Inclusion Network if you're not already part of it, and if you do have some local face-to-face support. You could signpost people to the local network partners. You could use Learn My Way to help people to learn beginner digital skills. There's over 100 learning topics, which has all been co-designed and co-created with people who were recently digitally excluded. And as I said, we're introducing AI and understanding AI at that very, very basic level. It has text-to-speech, so if people have low literacy or English as a second language, then it's also designed for them. And if you're a big employer, then please donate your used devices so we can get them into the hands of digitally excluded people. So that digital nation, that divide is still broad and it is still deep. The people who are left behind as the pace of digitization increases are left further and further behind. As Lisa was saying before, that we need to make sure that people have the skills and confidence and they know how to keep themselves safe and they know how to interact with one another when they get online. And so it's so important that we look at making sure that people have hyperlocal support, that they can get the skills, but the confidence and the trust that they need, as well as making sure that they have the access if they can't afford it. So let's do more good things together. And obviously you can contact me at Good Things, but I'm absolutely here for lots of questions and comments.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Helen. That was a really insightful presentation. So thank you. And we've got plenty of time for questions. So let's dive straight in. How can charities make the case to funders that digital inclusion matters? And why perhaps do so few funders see it as a priority? That's a question from Katie.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think Lisa, you touched on some of this in your presentation earlier. So I think that on one side, sometimes things like skills, funders hear training, or if they hear digital inclusion, they hear laptops. Yeah. And so sometimes funders are very nervous about funding things like training or laptops, which they think are just should just be there, should just be the fabric in society already. So sometimes it's about very much dialing up the outcomes. So if you're a charity that's, for example, supporting people with mental health, it's about mental health. And actually it's about making sure that people have the skills and confidence and trust for them to be able to be part of a digital world. I mean, one thing that a lot of charities have said to me, that they had to digitize their services in the pandemic to actually reach their beneficiaries, but actually there wasn't any funding for them to then enable those beneficiaries to use those services. I think that sometimes it just doesn't feel sexy enough. You know, that actually it's not shiny, it's not new. And I would say that, I mean, we all know this. I'm sure everyone who's been bidding for funding, who's on this session, knows that it's about making sure that you understand, you know, what the zeitgeists are. And so you're still doing digital inclusion, but for example, you're talking about AI, right? AI literacy as well as digital literacy. I think the other thing is that, I mean, you provided lots of evidence. Obviously, the Digital Nation has lots of evidence in it as well. One thing that we did when we did the pathway to community learning for the essential digital skills pilots, we put in enough funding so that half of the people that we supported could get a device. But we found that 80% of them needed a device, right? So I think it's about really getting into that evidence base, because most decision makers at funders, at government, at councils are included, right? So they're part of people who just have a device, have multiple.
Yeah, just use it. Yeah.
Exactly. They just use it. They've just got the broadband. It's just there. And they've had it for years. And therefore, they don't really understand how critical it is for people who are digitally excluded. So I think it's about, and then also finding your supporters, you know. So it's not always about your voice. So, you know, is it that your local MP has been to see your service and can see that digital exclusion is holding people back from accessing?
Back.
You know, can you actually find people who can speak out about how digital exclusion is stopping people from getting the benefits that they need? So, you know, it's a very long answer because it really depends what your charity does and it depends what it is that you want the funding for. But I would say those outcomes are so critical. So, you know, there's evidence on Digital Nation, there's evidence that you pulled up earlier, Lisa. So I think that making sure that you focus on the outcomes, the activities, I think would probably work for all funders.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Yeah, the outcomes, the impact as well, you know, our beneficiaries, because of their, you know, digital exclusion, are not able to do this, which means that unfortunately they have to rely more on our services, etc. You know, thinking about perhaps, you know, food bank and how sometimes some beneficiaries do not have the ability to access the, you know, the financial, you know, financial means benefits they are entitled to, and how food banks are also great ways to, you know, help these people access that, make them, you know, explain to them how to access that.
Absolutely. And I think that it's really important that the skills, confidence, and trust is there alongside the
Yes.
action. So, one in six of the Trussell Trust food banks, so one in six people who use Trussell Trust food banks are also digitally excluded. And so that's clearly really important. But a lot of food banks, for example, they might provide the SIMs, but they can't actually help people to
Help
use.
people to use it, yeah.
And so, but also, I think it might be 25%. Forgive me, if someone's from Trussell Trust, then maybe they can put it in the chat. But that something like 25% of people who use Trussell Trust food banks haven't spoken to anybody in the last month. So actually, if you think about that, if you think about loneliness and isolation rather than digital exclusion, and then construct the grant application to say, well, we want to focus on these people who are isolated, socially isolated, who are
Limited.
lonely, and actually they're also don't have access to the internet, they don't have devices, so let's make technology help them to be digitally included.
Included and part of society. Absolutely. Yeah, moving on. The next one we have is, given the digital skills and tools available in libraries, do you expect the closure of these libraries to contribute to digital divide?
Well, the easy answer is yes, of course. I mean, that I went through a bit of a journey during the pandemic that, you know, we had always been at Good Things focused on that skills, confidence, trust, reaching people, being available in communities. But when those doors closed, the huge scale of people who didn't have access, didn't have a device, didn't have internet, couldn't afford either of those things was so huge, and we saw it immediately. So of course, any taking away any community provision that provides people with support, with skills, with access. Libraries have free Wi-Fi, so if people do have a device but they don't ha can't afford the connectivity, they all have free PCs for people to use. So any reduction of that service is definitely going to affect people. And in the same way as we've seen the cost of living crisis also affect more people because people have actually said, I can't afford broadband anymore, and they've just off. And you know, we've seen a lot of those people coming to the National Device Bank, to the local data banks in the National Digital Inclusion Network to get that support because they've had to turn it off because everything's gone up, so they can't afford
You can't
that.
afford it. Absolutely. Thank you. And there's also actually a question around, that support that you mentioned. So how do you recommend charities be digitally inclusive with their supporters? So their supporters are also able to access their online platforms, and that might be mostly perhaps the donation platforms, but also their website and other things.
I suppose it's a difficult question because, again, it's a bit like the funding, grant funding is like, why are they digitally excluded, right? I would say that if they're digitally excluded, they're somebody else's beneficiary, right? So actually, for that ecosystem, is it about working locally in your ecosystem? So if you don't support people directly to do digital inclusion, then find someone locally. There's a map on the Good Things Foundation website. So if someone locally, we always say give them a ring first, don't just turn up because we don't know what they're doing right now. So make sure that you know what that ecosystem is, know who locally can support people, because of course you want them to say donate to your online platform, but you also want them to be able to benefit from a digital society, right? So it's that if you can signpost people, maybe if you do events and you can signpost some people to local digital inclusion support that they can get, definitely work in that ecosystem because that's the only way we're going to build a digital nation.
Absolutely.
Work together at that hyper local level, at that regional level, national, internationally. We need to collaborate to make sure we can't do everything ourselves. It's absolutely about us all playing our part and signposting, but understanding the ecosystem that we're already in as well.
Thank you. And yes, and we've got time for probably one more question. Is volunteering widely available to those who find themselves digitally excluded? What can charities put in place to ensure, these people that find themselves usually excluded can bring their qualities, skills, and values to charities and local communities?
So, I mean, typically what we see is almost the other way around, is that people included, they become, beneficiaries or learners, they get the support that they need, a bit like Minaj, as I said.
Minaj, yes.
It's like, so they go on a journey, and we know that actually people who get support through the National Digital Inclusion Network often will then go on to volunteer, not just in the digital world, but in many other ways, right? So is I think that if your volunteers are already digitally excluded, I think I would just go back to basics, So is it
Okay.
skills, confidence, motivation? Is it because they don't have access, they can't afford access? Quite often it's people, need a reason to start that journey. So, often unfortunately it's things like having to apply for universal credit or apply for something online, but it can be as simple as, communicating with friends or family. Please, one man, an older man I met recently showed me, he'd learned how to use WhatsApp, and he showed me
Oh,
a photo of my granddaughter. His granddaughter hadn't sent a photo to him ever because he wasn't online. And she didn't know how to print out a photo and put it in an envelope. So he hadn't actually had a photo from her. I said, "Oh, look, I can now get photos." So sometimes it's
wow.
making sure that you've got that. Also, often people say it's people like me don't do this. So you might have volunteers who are amazing, but are really resistant to being online. So actually, that having the stories of people like them who maybe were your volunteers, did get the skills, did get the access, and then now they're able to help people online, maybe with Zoom, or maybe to help some of the beneficiaries to use the internet to apply for things that they need to do online. So I think it's about making it incredibly relevant, but also stories and role models from the other volunteers that they've got already.
Yeah, that's really good. Thank you. And that answered a question we also had in the first session. And that's actually a much better answer than I gave. So thank you very much for that, Helen. that's all we will have time for today. I'm hoping that you might be available for a couple more hours if people would like to reach out to you directly.
Absolutely. Obviously on social media, and you can email me at helen@goodthingsfoundation.org. So I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and good luck to everyone for their digital inclusion journeys ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. That's been very inspiring. So thank you very much once again, Helen. And we'll also ensure that we can share the questions that we haven't answered with you. So if you have other resources to share, we can provide that. But thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.